peut s'effondrer et la terre peut bien s'écrouler. De ma porte, si tu m'aimes, je me fous du monde.
I hope you're turning your headphones up for the full effect of Edith Piaf. It'll come as no surprise that for today's sense of place, we're going to France, because you don't play Edith Piaf and then take your listeners off to deepest, darkest Peru. And it's the choice of our guest this morning for sense of place. Celebrated author Graham Simsion is better known, perhaps, for his books set in other parts of the world. But his latest book, The Best of Adam Sharp, does touch on France, which is clearly dear to his heart. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Yeah, the whole second half of the book, it more than touches on France, is actually set in France.
Yeah. You can't get away from it. So why? When did you first go to France?
Probably about mid-1980s. Did the grand, work for 6 months in the UK and spend all the money travelling around Europe. So that was the first time.
Had you been a Francophile before then, or did you discover it through travel?
Not really a Francophile, but I studied French at school, so there was always that interest in testing out your language skills, which had atrophied just a little bit since leaving school.
How's your French now?
It's better than it was when I left school.
Give me a little taste. See, I'm...
Non, pas du tout. Je ne veux pas parler français à ce moment-là, sinon.
I live in fear of mispronouncing French words because I think the only thing worse than looking foolish is looking foolish and pretentious at the same time.
Yeah, so, on air. You made me do it. I shouldn't have done that.
Our own listeners would just tear me apart. But you're so urbane in the way that you deliver it. Now, there's a particular pocket of France, though, that has your heart. Tell me a little bit about it.
My wife and I, back in 1996, decided we'd take a sort of 6 month sabbatical long service leave. And we planned to go to Italy, in fact, and couldn't find anywhere that suited us. And then out of nowhere, I met somebody at a hotel function. She said, my parents have got a place in France. Would that be of any interest to you? So we ended up in 1996 spending 6 months living in the Saône-et-Loire area, which is, part of Burgundy, near the Beaujolais country, near Mâcon, so about 400 kilometres south of Paris, in a little village called Château.
So it was just serendipity, really, that had you wind up there?
Well, absolutely. Our kids were studying Italian, and we suddenly said, okay, kids, you've got to change now.
Put the textbooks down.
They were 4 and 6 at the time. Put the textbooks down. Now you're going to learn the French because we changed.
So that village, tell me a bit about the village when you first got there. What did you find?
Yeah, look, this first time we went there for the 6 months, this was a village without any services, really, but a very beautiful village, much loved by expats, Anglos and so forth, but only a few kilometres from Cluny, which is a town of about, population about 5,000, but with an amazing history, a Benedictine abbey there from built in the 9th or 10th century. It's farmland rather than vineyards, Charolais cattle. And for us, for Anne and I, it was just a chance to get away, to do some writing. She wrote up a PhD thesis and so on.
So you made a connection. So your kids went to the local village school for
our French was pretty ordinary. We didn't even realise it was a Catholic school until they came back and told us about the nuns and so forth. But they went and thought it was only 4. And they were doing a full day, the two of them, at school. They wanted to do it. And the positive was that they ended up with pretty good French accents. Our daughter at 4 years old just came straight back from school. And we said, did you have any trouble with the language? And what? And she was just at that age where whatever was going around, and she points to the rubbish tin and she says, can I throw that in the poubelle, please? And she's suddenly using French words in her language.
That's fantastic. Did having kids make it easier to kind of feel at home there? Like, did it make you part of the community in a quicker way?
Yeah, because we were taking them into Cluny, to the school every day, and standing with all the parents outside the wall, because you never actually went into the school, and getting into conversations with the other parents. And we actually connected, as you would expect, with an expat. Well, he was American, she was local, and we got to know them very well over a period of time.
So do I have it right that you were living in the house of former ABC Moscow correspondent John Lombard, is that right?
That is the house, yep.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and they, we actually went back to that two or three times before they retired to it, as I understand it. I spent a lot of time there, and it was no longer available. And we actually bought ourselves a place in the area.
Do you feel like locals, or have you always felt? Do you always feel a bit like a kind of outsider?
And look, we're outsiders because we're only there a few weeks or a couple of months every year. So even if we were absolutely fluent in French and French culture and had long-standing friendships, would still be people who were blowing in and blowing out. But we certainly know a few of the people around the village to speak to, and of course the shopkeepers and so on, because this is a properly serviced village. It's a real working village.
Do you and Anne live a different life when you're there for those few weeks? Do you? Is French Graham demonstrably different to Australian Graham?
it was sort of funny because the American guy who I got to meet over there, we hung out with him. We were there for 6 months, and at one stage he asked me to come along. He was teaching English to a local class, and he said, "Are you going to be okay teaching and doing all that sort of stuff?" And I was a senior manager back in Australia. So I put on the suit and the tie and I turn up, and I'm very familiar with running seminars. And he had no idea. He had no idea of what my real job back in Australia was. And if I can say, on air, he said, so you run this business with 40 or 50 staff or whatever. And I said, yeah. He said, oh my God. He said, Graham's an asshole.
Whereas he had presumably before then just assumed you were a
regular
bum.
Guy, a bum. Yeah,
that's right. That's slightly different part of the anatomy. So what kind of landscape is it around there? Is it a particularly hilly region?
Yeah, look, it's rolling hills. The place that we've got is quite elevated, so it's got great views. But look, in some ways, more attractive than the vineyards. I mean, we're technically in Burgundy, but we're about an hour south or so from the Côte d'Or, the very famous, prestigious Burgundian vineyards. But personally, I would think that the area we're in is more attractive as landscape than the Burgundian vineyards.
But less touristy.
Oh, much, much less touristy. To my knowledge, there's only one other Anglo couple in town, and they run a B&B and have been there for 35 years. So yeah. They're pretty native now.
I'm chatting with Graham Simpson about the little pocket of France that he's made his own. I'm interested because the house you bought has a bit of a story behind it as well, doesn't it?
Well, it was, it's probably built in the 18th century. It's a little hard to tell with these things, farmhouse, but renovated by a Dutchman only, 15, 20 years ago. He was an aeronautical engineer, and he just renovated this place to within an inch of its life. I mean, the plumbing is all everything's over specified, which is actually great because a lot of the renovations in that area are a bit tacky. This is everything sort of fits and opens and closes and can be turned off or on. And
the precision of an aeronautical engineer.
That's right. Different locks on every door. You have this enormous thing of keys. Yeah.
So idiosyncratic features. Can you see the aeronautical kind of touches beyond those?
Well, we have all sorts of theories. I actually talk about this is the location for the best of Adam Sharp, and I talk about the house in that way. We have a theory that it was once owned by a pornographer, and now we don't want to make that connection with our late Dutch aeronautical engineer.
Even aeronautical engineers have hobbies, Graham.
But quite a curious setup. A big hidden safe and a dummy safe out somewhere else and bars on all the windows. It's quite atypical.
No, there's definitely something being filmed on that property in some way.
And we found a great cache of old video gear, worth a lot of money in its time, I would think, worth nothing now, stashed away in the roof.
Nice to have a bit of history in the house that you're in. That's always
a good
thing.
Well, not that sort of history normally.
Disconcerting, definitely. So I am interested in the way you write about it in Adam Sharp, because I'm just curious about how much, for you, place is an engine in your writing and how much it's just a necessary backdrop.
Well, at the sort of micro level, I find I don't have a very good visual sense. And I started off being a screenwriter, which is a worry, but I don't have a great visual sense. So if I imagine a house, I'm going to have someone walking from the kitchen to the living room. And then in another chapter, they'll be walking from the kitchen down the hallway to the living room. And train spotting readers will be disconcerted by this, and I wouldn't be. So I always use real places or whenever I can. So, Adam Sharp is actually, the best of Adam Sharp is actually set in our house. That is the house. I've reoriented it a bit to pick up the sunrise, and that's about all. But I find, in my novels, like in the Rosie Project. People really enjoy the sense of Melbourne, and you know, but again, I'm writing what I know. But I wanted The Best of Adam Sharp to be set partly in France, because you know, that actually affects the tone of what's going on. It's almost French bedroom farce at that point.
I was going to ask, I mean, how much is the Frenchness kind of part of your conception of that story? And the tonal thing, I think, is a very good point.
Yeah, well, that's part of, as I say, the French farce. The other part is that we're taking people out of their normal place. So some of the behaviours you see in The Best of Adam Sharp are a little bit, you know, left field. And you say, well, okay, these are three people in a French farmhouse where around them the people speak a foreign language. None of them are particularly adept in French. There's that sense of isolation as well.
Has it changed in the 20 or so years you've been going there?
Less than you would think. It hasn't changed a lot. I mean, there was a big deal when the butcher, who's a very good butcher, you know, sold to somebody else, and that was big news in the village, but it didn't work out and he bought it back. So,
oh, good. I'm glad it manages to go full circle. That is deeply reassuring. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Graham.
Thanks very much, Michael.
That was the voice of Graham Simpson, the author of The Best of Adam Sharp, as well as The Rosie Project and The Rosie Effect, all published by Text Publishing.